Sugar pink cardboard necks, inserted into the tops of their Tudor dresses, rested on upended breeze blocks borrowed from the local builder. The Queen's real heads were safely concealed beneath the built-up shoulders of their costumes. The necks of their dresses, topped off with starched ruffs, were stitched closed to complete the illusion of their recent execution. To stop the headless queens wobbling around as their carnival float progressed up the high street, they were wired to the safety rail that ran around the edge of the trailer. Henry VIII's other four wives sat upright and entire on low wooden thrones borrowed from the choir stall of the village church. The king basked on the larger bishop's seat raised on a dais at the tractor end of the float. You couldn't blame Tom, the executioner, for looking pleased with his neat work. All the way up the high street he'd waved to the crowd as proudly as if he'd just won MasterChef. Two small children burst into terrified tears at the sight of the dark hooded figure. They were comforted only when he pulled up his knitted balaclava to reveal that it was really just Ian, the village school's lollipop man. Over on the Wendelbury writer's float, we thought it better not to wave. Smiling and waving, royal style, would have been all wrong from serious literary heroes. I was Virginia Woolf. As we waited, restless, to hear the judge's verdict, I noticed the Wendelbury player's director, Rex, self-cast as Henry VIII, staring at me. I couldn't believe he could be so shameless, knowing his girlfriend Dido was in the crowd. From the moment I'd met him at one of the players' rehearsals back in June, there was something about him that put me on my guard. Blushing angrily, I faced the other way, hoping to goodness that Dido didn't think there was anything going on between us. As a diversionary tactic, I pretended to be riveted by the WI's suffragette-themed float, parked on the other side of ours. It was an interesting spectacle. In front of a backdrop painted to resemble a London city street ran a row of large iron railings, plastic fencing, spray-painted gunmetal grey. To these were chained half a dozen middle-aged ladies in hired My Fair Lady costumes. The one at the centre wore a large rosette saying Mrs. Pankhurst to clarify their theme. All six were adorned with the suffragette movement's distinctive green, purple and white sashes, the kind now more usually associated with beauty queens. None of the chained protesters looked as if they'd recently been in prison on hunger strike. What would Virginia Woolf have made of the village show? I wish I'd done a little more research before picking her as my literary hero. I should have at least read one of her books. I'd only chosen her to try and impress my new friends at the Wendelbury Writers and to look clever in front of my new boss, Hector Munro, proprietor of the village bookshop. Now dressed as Homer, he was towing our float with his Land Rover. But never mind, Virginia Woolf. I was still unsure of what to make of the village show myself. Although when I was still at school I'd spent a fortnight here every summer holiday, staying with my great-aunt May, my visits had never coincided with the show. Returning to live here at the age of 25, I'd assumed taking part in the carnival parade would be innocent fun. Now I was not so sure. Masking the sharp scent of fresh hay that bordered the arena, a new aroma cut into my senses. Flatulence, from the executioner now standing with his back to me and Anne Boleyn. Lucky her to have her head inside her dress to keep out of that little cloud, I was thinking, just as a loud crackle from the tannoy alerted us that the judges were about to announce the results of the float competition. The broad Gloucestershire burr of Stanley Harding, village show chairman, boomed.
Congratulations to another fine field of entries for the carnival procession.
His commentary was well practiced, this being his 21st show in that prestigious position. The post was passed on as if by birthright. He'd taken over the role, uncontested, from his father, and it was his grandfather's before that. This latter-day feudal system didn't seem to do anyone any harm, if the bustling crowd's obvious delight with the proceedings was anything to go by.
Thank you all for the wonderful hard work that you've put into making such a fabulous display. In reverse order, this year's prizes are as follows. In third place, the WI for their Mary Poppins float, showing Mrs. Banks and her sister suffragettes.
There was a roar of applause and shrieks of delight from the chained ladies who seemed unperturbed that their serious political statement had been misinterpreted as a Disney movie. The suffragettes tried to hug each other, forgetting they were all chained to the railings and succeeding only in wrenching their arms and shoulders and dislodging the iron-effect fence. That they remained constrained added to the crowd's enjoyment. No one came forward with the padlock keys to release them, despite their cries for help.
"Core, those ladies are a force to be reckoned with," continued Stanley. "You chaps had better watch your backs once they get loose."
He paused for dramatic...